Today we're talking to one of our favorite YouTubers, storytellers ever. In fact, we don't watch a lot of YouTube, but
we really don't.
No, but we watch this guy a lot.
So if you don't know who Ryan Van Duger is, Ryan, how do you even explain him? He is probably got one of the most contagious, upbeat personalities, and he travels the world mostly by bicycle.
And it's just something when you watch him, you can tell when he interacts with people, he's just, I'm like, are you always this happy? Are you I think he is too.
Just and that passionate about life. Yeah,
but the thing we really love about his travels, you know, one, it's by bicycle, but two, it's the people that he invites in, and he gets to experience all sorts of different cultures, all sorts of different people from big cities to small town America to people in Mexico or Sweden or Rwanda. And he invites these people inside his videos, and you just get to see a different side of life.
Different side of humanity. His videos always have the common thread of people in this world are not that bad. People are mostly good people. And he shares a lot of that hope for humanity in his videos, but always filled with travel and adventure along the way. So Ryan is an amazing storyteller of taking us along around the world with him. And we're talking with him today about some of his most recent trips, including biking Rwanda, Sweden. He's biked across America multiple times. I mean, this guy's been everywhere.
He's been everywhere. He's been everywhere. So we're going to get into the conversation. But before we do, if you can make sure to leave a review for this podcast, it really helps us out quite a bit. That's the only ask that I have.
Yeah. I think that's it.
That's it. All right. Let's just hop right into the conversation with Ryan. Ryan, thanks for being here today. We really appreciate it.
I am so excited to be here. It's an honor, and let's have some fun.
Sounds good. All right. So I guess to start out, I know a lot of people know who you are. You are actually highly requested when we asked for people like, who do you guys want to hear on the podcast? We had multiple people say Ryan. So people do know you because you just give us an introduction of who you are, what you do, what you create, all that kind of thing.
First of all, thank you to all your listeners for watching my videos and wanting to hear more from me. I feel like people get sick of me because I have enough out there, but thank you. I'm Ryan Van Duser. I am from Boulder, Colorado. I've never driven a car. Well, I guess I can't say that. I've never had a driver's license. I live a car-free life. I ride my bicycle everywhere. I love promoting people to ride their bikes more and to go out and adventure. And that's what my channel is all about, is to show people what is out there in the world and what's possible. And you don't have to be an elite athlete and have the best gear. It's all about just getting outside.
I love that.
Yeah. I didn't know that about the driver's license.
I didn't know that part either.
Yeah, super interesting. And so how long has that been happening?
Well, let's see, I'm 44 years old now. And I remember when I was 16 and all of my friends got driver's licenses. And I was like, I'm not going to get one. I'm going to ride my bike forever. And there are many reasons why. But the main one is when I was a little kid, I was, you know, I'm born and raised in Boulder, a very environmentally conscious city. And I was like, you know what? In my mind, cars are bad. Cars are pollution. And I want to try to help Mother Nature. And so that's my simplistic reason why I never really got a car or got a driver's license. And now I just love riding my bike because it's fun and it makes me feel good.
I love that. I love it. So our journey with cycling didn't start until we were older. It's actually how we met. Mm-hmm. We met cycling across America. But we fell in love with it. Like, we don't cycle to the extent that you do, but we discovered your channel, I think it was like back during COVID, and we were all stuck at home. I want to say it was your Great Divide series. Mm-hmm. And it just was like, it filled that wanderlust that we had when we couldn't actually go out there and do it ourselves.
Yeah.
And you've just done some incredible bike trips, bike packing kind of things. So maybe for people who aren't familiar with you, what trips have you done? And then what has been the most recent trip?
So I have been lucky and fortunate to have ridden my bike lots of different places. The first big adventure I ever did, and this is the adventure that kicked it off and made me want to be a adventure storyteller, is I was a Peace Corps volunteer in Honduras in 2003 to 2005. And when I finished my service, I got on my bicycle and rode it home to Boulder, Colorado, 4,000 miles.
Wow.
Oh, we got a motorcycle. That's not my motorcycle. It's my neighbor's driving by. But anyway, so that was my first big trip. And it, I just loved it. I'd never felt so alive in my life. Every day was a new adventure. I camped along the side of the road. People invited me into their homes and fed me meals. And I just saw all of the goodness in humanity. Because a lot of times when, you know, the Western media portrays Mexico or Latin America in general, it's in a very negative light. And I went through these countries and had the best time of my life and met wonderful humans, generous humans, big-hearted humans everywhere I went. And when I finished that journey 3 months later, I said to myself, I want to figure out a way to make a living through travel and storytelling. And so since then, I've been on quite a journey. I used to work in the TV world more with Travel Channel and other networks. But now I'm on YouTube. It's a dream job. I get to tell the stories that I want to tell in the way that I want to tell them. I can share my heart and my soul, all the ups and the downs, and it's a dream, and I love it. So other adventures, I've ridden across the country 4 times, the United States being that country. I rode a cruiser bike one of those times, essentially to show people, hey, you don't need to have the best gear to do something big. And I had a cruiser bike with a trailer going across the country from Oceanside near San Diego to Washington, D.C. I've gone down both the East and the West Coast. I've ridden across Cuba and all sorts of other fun places. The Great Divide. This summer, I rode my bike from the top of Sweden above the Arctic Circle all the way down to the bottom of Sweden to the village where I lived in as an exchange student 25 years ago. So for me, riding my bike, yes, I love the physical aspect of it. It's fun. But it's a way to connect with humans. And if you watch my videos, you see that the highlights are when I meet people and share their stories on my channel. And I love that. That's my favorite part about doing what I do.
We love that part of your channel. I mean, we're not like crazy avid cyclists, but it's the human aspect of it that we fell in love with too. Seeing the small places in America that nobody else sees and just seeing exactly like what you said, it's not always what the news portrays. That goes for just about anywhere in the world. And yeah, the way you connect with people everywhere you go and just take us along for what it's really like. I mean, it's just, the cycling is a huge part of it and the adventures there and the new places, but it's always the stories of the people that set it apart.
And you've got such, I feel like I say this a lot to people, but you especially, you have this really infectious personality where you invite people in. And it doesn't seem very hard for you to strike up a conversation with a stranger or, is it natural for you to be able to just start talking randomly on the road? Be like, yeah, I rode my bike here from, you know, California while you're in Arkansas or wherever. And how do you find these stories? How do you find these people, the good people that you feature?
You know, I don't plan any of this. It's not like a TV show where there's a lot of producers involved and like at mile 90, you're going to meet this nice old farmer and you're going to interview him. You know, I just happen upon these people in the parking lots of gas stations or at small town diners or wherever. And, you know, I don't start filming them right away. I will start talking with them, start telling them about my story and what I'm doing. And then, you know, I'll be like, hey, you know what? My audience loves hearing from other people other than me. They get sick of me. Would you be willing to chat about your story on my channel? And 9.9 times out of 10, people are always excited to share their stories. And to me, it is kind of easy. It's not like it takes a lot of work. And that's why I do it. I love it. I love meeting these people, even if it slows me down a couple hours on my projected itinerary for the day, it doesn't matter because those are the moments that I truly cherish and I love sharing with my audience.
Let's actually talk about that really quick. You're on a bicycle. You have to make it somewhere by nightfall. Typically, you know, it's not good news to really bike at night for the most part, but you meet somebody and you're trying to keep a schedule. But then on top of that, you're filming. And like there are certain shots in your videos where I know that you rode there, you set up the tripod, and then you rode back to get that shot of you going up whatever hill or whatever. And how, like, What's a typical day look like? What's the mileage?
Logistics. We're always, as YouTubers, we're always fascinated by the logistics.
We are, like, whether it's, yeah, we're just fascinated by all of it. So let's pull back the curtain. I want to know this, like, nitty gritty stuff.
Well, I want to tell you a secret. There are 10 people with me at any time, and they all have cameras and drones, and they're filming me at all times. Just kidding. You know, it is a ton of work. It's absolutely a ton of work. But I love it. It is fun. And there are times where I'm tired. I'm on mile 80 for the day. It's 100 degrees out. I want to be done. But maybe I'm seeing something beautiful. And I'm like, Ryan, you need to stop and document this. Because if you don't film it, it's like it never happened for the audience. And so I need to put in the effort to get these shots. And it makes it all worth it when I come home and I have great footage to edit. Because if I was just riding down the road with a GoPro on my head the whole time, the footage wouldn't be very dynamic. So it really makes it come alive when I put my camera on the tripod and ride in front of the camera and get the drone out and try to get a mix of different shots. So it's not just one camera angle the entire time. And yeah, it's a lot of work. But again, it's my job now and I love it. And I'm, you know, proud to say that I'm a YouTuber that gets to bike around the world and share stories.
How amazing is that? Like, I think that so many people, it's my dream job or one of my dream jobs. I think that'd be so cool. Yeah. So I want to ask one more question about the logistics before we go on to the actual places you've been and the people you've met. And that is how far in advance do you plan where you're staying at night? Because I know from watching some of your past bikepacking trips and stuff, you end up staying with locals or you'll just find a spot on the side of the road. So what does that look like? I mean, how far are you planning?
You know, I really don't plan much at all. Even my big adventures, like I'm going to do something this fall. I don't really know what I'm going to do, but it'll come to me and I'm just going to run out and do it. So I know a lot of people like planning way more than I do, but I'm not a huge planner. You know, and on a day-to-day basis, I wake up and I'll look at my maps and say, okay, I'd like to get to this town for resupply, or at least maybe I haven't had a hotel in 4 days and I want to get a shower and charge up all my electronics. So some days I'll have an idea of where I want to go, but I would say most days I have no clue how far I'm going to get, no clue where I'm going to sleep or who I'm going to meet or what I'm going to eat. That's what I mean is when I say every day is an adventure, it really is. Like I just wake up, pack my stuff, and start moving.
I was going to ask, do you feel that when every day looks different, do you feel like you remember life a little bit better? Because I know, is that where you were going with?
Yeah, I was going.
Yeah, because that's something we've always noticed is like when life is a little bit unpredictable and you're pushing yourself out of your comfort zone, whether that's, you know, socially or physically or whatever that looks like, I tend to remember life better. And I think probably filming on top of it, do you just have better vivid memories of the moments you've experienced along the way?
You know, that's a great point. And I really do feel that way. A lot of times I'll say to myself at the end of a day, like, wow, this morning at 8 a.m. feels like a completely different day. It feels so long ago. I feel like I get 2 to 3 days in one day when I'm out on a bikepacking adventure because so much happens and you're so hyper alert of everything. You're navigating, you're filtering water, you're meeting people, you're riding your bike, which can be physically difficult. So your brain is on overdrive all day long. And then finally, when you relax at the end of the day, you're like, wow, breakfast seems like it was a week ago. Yeah. And then when I get to document it, of course, you know, I come home and I edit footage. Right now I'm editing my footage from Sweden and I get to relive a lot of these very powerful moments in my life. It's very cool.
How cool is that? That is cool. I love that.
So when you go home, are you bored? Like,
you know, it's funny when I,
oh, go ahead.
When I get home from adventures, I'm usually psyched to be home because I love my home. I love Boulder and my friends and my community. But after like a week or so, I'm like, oh, I kind of want to get on the road again, you know?
Same.
Yeah. That's how we are too. Yeah.
Yeah. It takes me like, I don't know. I enjoy being back home with like a regular shower, a laundry machine, washing machine. And then after a few days, I'm ready for something abnormal again. That's how I am. Yeah. So how many days do you actually spend at home a year? Because I feel like you live on a bike at least 30% of the year. Is that true?
Yeah, I would say something like that. Before the pandemic, I traveled like 150 to 200 days a year.
Wow.
It's not as much these days, but it's still quite a bit. I haven't really calculated it out, but I'm gone quite a bit.
I want to jump to some of your most recent trips, which I think the one that I find really fascinating is Rwanda. And I don't remember when exactly that was. Was it June or March? Okay, it's been a little bit. Can you talk to us about Rwanda? Because that's obviously a country that has, I mean, it's gone through so much the last few decades. And I feel like, especially seeing it through your eyes and how much they've progressed and how much it's changed, it's become like this destination. It's just this beautiful country. Could you kind of walk us through your expectations of what you were, when you headed to Rwanda, what you were expecting and then what you actually experienced while you were there?
I love it. I love talking about Rwanda. So I had never been to Africa before. Rwanda was not on my list of places to go this year. And I got an email from the tourism board saying, hey, we love your videos. We would love for you to come to Rwanda and help us promote cycling in Rwanda because we want people to come here and see our beautiful country on the seat of a bicycle. And I was like, okay, that sounds awesome. And I don't usually do sponsored trips with tourism boards because they can be really curated. Yeah. Like my adventures are wide open and whatever happens, happens. But when you work with a tourism board, it's usually a pretty strict itinerary. Mm-hmm. But this sounded too good to pass up. So I went over there. I read some books before I went to Rwanda. Obviously, we've all heard of the genocide in 1994 and the horrific events of that. And I had also read in these books that Rwanda has made a complete turnaround and is one of the most safe countries in Africa now, and progressive in a way that even the United States or Western European countries are not. You know, they banned single-use plastic bags a long time ago, way before we did, because they know that all this stuff is really horrible for the environment. Yeah. And it was fascinating to be there. You know, the landscape is stunning, all the rolling hills, and it's just emerald green and jungles. And of course, one of the highlights of my life was visiting the mountain gorillas.
Oh my gosh.
You know, we got to go on a trek into the jungle and see the mountain gorillas, which was super special. And this is where I really appreciated being with the tourism board, because to see the mountain gorillas is a $1,500 permit per person.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, it's really expensive. Wow. So I probably would never, I would never have done it on my own. But man, it was so magical to see these creatures and look into their eyes and like connect with them on a level that I've never connected with another animal.
How
you know, they're 99.5% the same as us. Yeah. And so that was fascinating. And the way I worked around the whole strict itinerary of a tourism board is I did their whole trip for 10 days where it was all these different events all day long for 10 days. And I said, I will do this trip if I can stay later and do my own bike trip. They said, that sounds great. So I rode what's called the Congo Nile Trail, which is along Lake Kivu. And it's a new tourism route that the country has developed to promote people to go to these village, far off villages and experience African life away from the cities. And this Congo Nile Trail was absolutely stunning. And I had a guide with me, Kali, the guy who actually developed the route. So I had the perfect person to be riding with. And everywhere I went on my bicycle, kids were chasing me and yelling at me, yelling like good things, not like angry things. Like, hello, hello, friend, how are you? Amakuru. Amakuru is their way of saying, how are you? Oh. And so it was like a fairy tale. It really was going to Rwanda.
Wow. So I'm really curious because I know that they've invested a lot in the tourism side of cycling. But what would you say if someone like us was interested in cycling Rwanda? Because I think that would be absolutely incredible. What should we know about that? Like, it's really kind of hard for me to imagine exactly what kind of amenities to expect. Or like, I mean, I'm thinking like resupplying, like food, water. Yeah. I mean, I hear Rwanda and I think probably amazing coffee the whole way. But past that, I don't really know what to expect. So what does that look like?
You know, what I've told my friends since coming home is it's a super safe place to ride a bike because there aren't many vehicles on the roads. And they're very mindful of people on bikes because a lot of the country uses bikes to move their goods from market to market. And so whenever you're on a road in Rwanda, the sides of the roads are filled with people on bicycles going all different directions. So first off, it's a safe place to ride, which is key because a lot of places are not safe. Mm-hmm. You know, in the United States, I try my best to stay away from paved roads now because there's so much distracted driving. People are on their phones.
100%.
And it's horrifying. So that's why I try to do most of my adventures on dirt. So I'm away from cars. And if I crash, it's my fault.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know? Yeah. No one else to blame. Yes.
Yeah, exactly. But as far as resupply, you know, there's food, there's restaurants, there's water. People are very friendly, very curious. I've even heard as a single woman, it's a safer place to travel than other parts of Africa. And they have some established bike routes now, both mountain biking on dirt and on the roads. You know, Rwanda itself as a country, they love cycling. And they have a Rwandan national cycling team that's very strong and very fit and competes on an international level. Wow. So, yeah, I think if you do want to go to Rwanda and ride your bike, it's the perfect place. You could just ride around in circles and have the time of your life.
Let's go. Wow. Yeah. I'm ready to go.
Sold me on that.
Yeah. I've never been to Africa either, but I keep hearing people say Rwanda is just this incredible, like they've done so much in such a short amount of time that it's just like this incredible destination right now. So yeah. I hope we get to go there very soon.
Yeah.
Maybe by bike. I don't know.
So Rwanda is one trip that you took this year, but then on the flip side, I feel like completely 360, you went to Sweden. I mean, it's completely different on the opposite end of the world.
Well, it's north.
Like north, like, yeah. And so,
Sweden's special to you because you lived there.
Let's talk about Sweden.
So Sweden was a trip a long time in the making. I was an exchange student there 25 years ago. It was that experience that opened my eyes to the world. You know, I grew up in Boulder in this beautiful little protected bubble. It's a beautiful city, but I didn't get out much. I was raised by a single mom. She had four kids. We didn't go on vacations. So I had never experienced really anything outside of Boulder. The one time I left Boulder when I was a kid was to go to Wyoming for a soccer game. And I thought that was pretty exciting.
Wow.
So Sweden, when I graduated high school, was a very big deal. And my host family was incredible. It was destiny to be matched up with these people. I was a Rotary International Exchange student. I went to school. I met my first love over there. I learned to speak Swedish. It was a dream situation. So Sweden will always hold a special place in my heart. And when I was an exchange student there, I always dreamed of going to the far north to experience the midnight sun. I was down outside of Malmö, Sweden, which is the very southern tip. But I never made my northern Sweden dreams come true. And finally, this year I did. And actually, last year I had the trip all set to go. I had my bike packed up in a box. And 24 hours before I was supposed to get on the airplane, Scandinavian Airlines went on strike and all the itineraries were canceled.
No.
So I was really close last year and then finally made it happen this year. I flew to the very top of Sweden, a city called Kiruna, which is above the Arctic Circle. Uh-huh. And I landed on midsummer, which is the longest day of the year. Uh-huh. And it was incredible. I never saw darkness when I was in Sweden, which is bizarre.
So cool.
You know, you're in your tent and you need to go outside and use the bathroom at 3 a.m. and it is light outside. It's crazy.
I love it. Did you bike extra long days because you just had no perception of time?
For sure. I rode till 10, 11 p.m. some nights because, you can.
Wow. That's so weird.
That's amazing.
So you said you speak Swedish. That cannot be an easy language. I feel like it'd be really difficult. Is it?
Well, maybe it is if I tried to learn it now, but I was 18. I went to Swedish high school. I had a Swedish girlfriend. So it was just kind of like learning English when I was a baby. I just heard the same words over and over and over and finally started picking it up. And I really made an effort to learn Swedish because if you've ever been to Northern, Europe, Scandinavia, they are amazing at English. There's no reason to learn Swedish because you don't need it because their English is perfect. But I really made a point to learn Swedish. I wanted to get the most out of my experience. So yeah, I speak Swedish, which is totally random and not very useful unless you're in Sweden.
I love that. Yeah, I'm Finnish, part Finnish. And I always was like, I'm going to learn Finnish. And I realized that's like a completely useless language in America. There's like no Finnish people, but their words are like, 10 miles long. And I kind of imagine it's the same
Finnish thing. Finnish is actually way different than Swedish. So Swedish Danish and Norwegian are pretty similar.
Okay.
Finnish is totally different.
It's its own weird thing. I've heard that.
That truly is a hard language.
Yeah, I don't think that's going to happen. Not at this age. Maybe. Yeah. But okay, so Sweden is the series that you're currently working through, editing and posting on YouTube.
Yep.
We need, is there anything people should know about that to go catch up? Like where, how many videos will there be? And
there'll be quite a few videos. So a lot of times when I'm on a bike trip, I'll make a video for one full day. So if the trip is 10 days, I'll have 10 videos.
Wow.
So I film quite a bit to make sure to be able to fill up a full day's worth of action. So I'm on video number 7 right now. The beginning of the trip was very difficult because it was super rainy and super mosquito-y. Is that a word?
I was going to ask. Yes, I was going to ask about that.
Oh, the mosquitoes were absolutely horrible. It was crazy. I'd never experienced anything like it. I had been warned that there were lots of mosquitoes, but boy, I wasn't ready. And it was crazy making. I couldn't stop ever and just eat a Cliff Bar or energy bar or whatever and enjoy myself, because if I stopped, the mosquitoes would descend.
Oh.
If I was going slowly up a hill, they could go my speed and, you know, suck my blood while I was riding my bike.
So
it was nuts. I was not a big fan of the Swedish mosquitoes. I loved everything about Sweden except for the mosquitoes.
Did they get better as you went further south away from the Arctic?
So yeah, I was originally riding what's called the Euro Divide Trail, which is in the middle of nowhere, backwoods.
Okay.
And I realized that the backwoods is where the most of the mosquitoes were. Mm. And I changed my route. I was like, I don't want to stay on this route. It's driving me nuts. So I headed more toward the coast where there's a lot fewer mosquitoes. Mm-hmm. And then it got better.
Okay. Were people pretty respectful of cyclists up there?
Very respectful. Yeah. Okay. You know, in the United States, you know, I get honked at all the time by cars. And in Sweden, I didn't get honked at once. Again, Europe, Sweden, it's a bike-centric culture. A lot of people ride bikes there. They respect cyclists. So they're not as aggro as in the United States. So I was treated very well by all the drivers in Sweden. And way up north, there's really not that many people. So I was seeing a lot more reindeer than humans in cars.
How cool is that?
That is super cool.
That's amazing.
What would be the most dangerous place that you've cycled?
You know, I guess as far as like cars.
Yeah,
I think cars. Or people shooting at me.
Oh, gosh.
I mean, either or.
Cars. Yeah,
I mean.
I would say the United States for sure is the most dangerous.
Sure.
Really?
There's so many cars and everybody's in a hurry. So many people are distracted drivers. So again, like I said, I try to stay off roads in the United States. There are times where I have to ride pavement to connect different places. But yeah, it's a bummer. But that's why I'm so passionate about what I do in promoting bicycle advocacy and trying to get cities to build more protected bike lanes, because if we can get more people riding bikes, then drivers are going to see more people on bikes and they're going to hopefully respect us more. And that's how they did it in Europe. That's the model there. And countries like Denmark and Holland and Sweden and all these different countries, France, have huge numbers of bike commuters where people just use their bikes to go to work, to the grocery store.
Love that. That's wow.
Yeah. Cuba's another very safe place to ride a bike if you ever want to go to Cuba.
Really?
Yeah. Cuba's kind of like Rwanda in a way, where there's not many vehicles on the roads, and everybody there, they're used to like people in horse-drawn carts and buggies all over the place going slow on the roads. The cars just go slow. They're not looking to run anybody over.
Wow. I would not have I mean, I've never been to Cuba, but I wouldn't have thought about cycling Cuba.
Yeah.
When did you do that? Can I ask? What year was
I've done it twice, actually. I did it in 2015 and then again in 2018.
Okay.
Wow. Okay, so recently.
Yeah.
That's
incredible. So it's a fascinating place, even if you're not on a bike, but it's a great place to ride a bike.
Man, that would be so cool. And it's not that far to get to.
Yeah.
It's pretty, and we're from the East Coast, so it's like, you know, 2-hour flight from us.
Yeah, not too bad at all.
So cool. Okay, so I have a question for you. I'm going to guess you probably have a whole bucket list of places you want to cycle. So could you give us maybe you like to keep this quiet, but like what's next or what would be your bucket list place?
You know, I want to ride. I've been to Nepal 3 times wow. to trek in the Himalayas. I would love to ride my bike more in Nepal. I love that country. Mm. I love the culture. I love the architecture. I love the religion. I love the food. Nepal is fascinating to me. So I'd love to ride my bike there a bit more. I would love to ride my bike in different places in Africa, Mozambique. You know, I mean, there's so many different, I mean, I'll ride my bike anywhere. I want to ride my bike in Argentina and Brazil. So I have a long list of places where I want to go.
Yeah.
And we'll, you know, I slowly just chip away at the list and make it happen.
Wow. I love that.
That's amazing.
Go ahead. I'm asking all the questions again.
No, you're
doing
great.
I have a bad habit of that.
No, you're doing great. Well, I was going to say, like, I mean, if somebody's listening to this and they're like, oh, wow, yeah, I'd love to bike there. I'd love, but they don't know how to bike, you know, or is there any, like, good practical, like, first steps on, I know, like, getting a bike would probably be a good one, but how could somebody start doing the similar adventures that you're doing now?
You know, I always tell people to start small. A lot of different people watch my channel and they'll write comments saying, oh, this looks so good and it's so beautiful, but I'm scared of, you know, lots of different things. And so I tell people to start small, you know, get a bike that fits you. It doesn't need to be an amazing bicycle. Like I said, I rode a 3-speed cruiser bike all the way across the country. You can ride just about anything as long as it fits you and it's comfortable. And then go out for one night and just see what it's like to test your gear and put up your tent and blow up your sleeping mattress and see if you really like it. And most people do. Most people love the freedom of traveling by bicycle and seeing the world at a slower speed. And so, yeah, start small and then from there, start dreaming about bigger trips.
Love that. That's good advice. Yeah.
And going to your local bike shop is a great place to start as far as like what type of bike to get. People ask me all the time about what kind of bike. And, you know, I just tell them, you know, anything that fits you is a good bike.
That's good.
If you're comfortable on it, if it feels right, you're ready to go, then you start buying some, you know, different bags and panniers for your bike so you can carry your gear and your food and your cans of beans and you're good to go.
I love it. This is a common thread in a lot of our episodes is the point of entry. Like just we'll have people on for cycling or international travel or like whatever it is. And it's always, we love having people share with us how to just get started. Cause I know that for a lot of people, it's that intimidation of just get going. And mm-hmm. yeah. I mean, for us, especially, I mean, it could be daunting. Cycling is not cheap. It could be very expensive, but I know that when we started, we both started very minimal. I got a used bike on Craigslist. It is still the bike I bike on 10 years later. Right. And I love that little bike, but it's just, it doesn't take a lot. And I think that that's a really important thing, especially with cycling, because it can be daunting.
And you touched on something that is like really meaningful to us is traveling slow and doing it by bicycle. I feel like for the most part, you are traveling slow. Do you find yourself all like longing for those types of trips, like slow travel? Do you feel like you get to know the place a little better or the people a little better?
You know, since my very first trip, I call it life at 15 miles an hour.
Sorry. dog.
I love it. It's not a good podcast unless a dog is barking in the background.
That's right. That's
Continue. Hey,
buddy. So ever since my first trip, I've called it life at 15 miles an hour. And that even might be a little fast for a bike trip. Most people like maybe 12 or 13 miles an hour.
That's right. Yeah.
But you really get to experience a place at a pace that puts you there on the ground where you can hear the bugs buzzing and the flowers and the birds chirping and the wind blowing through the trees and the leaves. And you get to stop in these small town cafes or community centers. You get to meet just regular old people in the middle of nowhere. And I love it. I mean, that's really why I love traveling by bicycle. It's a connector. It's a tool. It's a way for me to see the world. And for me, it's the best way to travel. Now look at me now. I have like loud sounds in the background. Hold on. I'm going to close my window. Okay, that's going to be better.
No, good. I could barely hear that at all.
Yeah,
Oh, really? It's so loud here.
Yeah.
No. You're good. I was gonna say, cycling by bike, like traveling by bike, is. I think if we could have it our way, that's what we would do. Like We travel slow. We're in a 1988 Land Cruiser right now, which goes maximum 55 miles an hour, which feels slow to us.
You would beat us on a downhill any given day. So.
But cycling would be our preferred method. But we have this little guy, the little four-legged friend right here, who makes it a little more difficult. But I have seen you travel. Yeah. One of your friends has a dog. Is it Mira? Is that right?
Yeah, Mira, and she has become more famous than me and John and everybody else on my channel. Everybody loves Mira, the wonder dog. I met John and Mira in the middle of nowhere on the Baja Peninsula in 2020.
Oh my gosh.
We were both riding what's called the Baja Divide, and John rode up to me, and he had seen my videos, and we just started talking, and we traveled together for the next 7 days. And his dog, Mira, is absolutely incredible. She's so fun. She has tons of energy. She's a goofball. And I love traveling with her. And so he has a longer extended bike that has a basket on the back. Uh-huh. So she's in and out of this basket all day long. Sometimes she's running alongside us. Sometimes she's in the basket. And it just makes life a lot more fun, especially when you're camping at nighttime, to have a dog around, because you can play fetch. And sometimes you're having a hard day. It's scary. You're intimidated. It's hot, you know, and you can get in your own head and really go to a dark place. But when you have a dog there, like jumping on you and barking, wanting you to throw a stick, it snaps you out of your little pity party. And that's what Mira does. She's so, so fun and engaging. And since then, we've done, you know, lots of other trips together. We've ridden our bike through other parts of Mexico and the United States, and I'm sure I will meet him down the road somewhere else.
Yeah, he's the first one I've ever seen, like, bike pack with a dog.
Yeah,
I got to figure out the balance. I mean, Kramer is not, that's our dog Kramer, he's definitely not as athletic as Mira is.
No.
But I think we could figure something out, maybe. One day.
He's a little drama queen sometimes, but.
Well, give him the opportunity. Maybe he could turn into, you know, a bike packing dog.
Yeah.
He might have to. He's been a lot of places, this little guy has.
Yeah.
But I know you've got another meeting to get to. So let's wrap up. Let's see, where do we want to take it to get the last few questions?
Well, what would you say to somebody right now? Like, if you could give them one piece of advice, whether it's about cycling or traveling or life in general, like, what would you say?
That's a big question.
I know, that is a big question. Sorry.
If you're curious about something, maybe you've watched some YouTube videos about biking or running or hiking or whatever it is. If you're curious, I would say go try it. Give it a shot. My whole tagline ever since the very beginning of my career when I was on public access TV was get out there. Just really simple. Just get out there, get off your couch, and try it. And I think most people, once they get out there and they do try something new, they build up a lot of confidence in themselves. Yes, trying something new is scary and overwhelming, but when you go out there and you confront some of these fears, 100% of the time, you're going to be able to get through it. I mean, humans are very resilient, and you learn more about yourself, and you feel more connected to yourself and to your surroundings and your fellow humans. You know, because of all my bike trips, I feel way more connected to the world and all these different cultures from Rwanda, Sweden, Mexico, United States. And it's a great feeling, because if you sit at home and you watch the news and you let the news just kind of drive the narrative, and it's just scary and dark, and it tells you that most people are bad and dangerous, then a lot of people start believing that, and they fear their neighbors. They fear the outside world. Yeah. But when you get out there and you take that initiative, that all changes immediately, and that's where the magic happens. So if you're listening to this and you want to get out there, I recommend you to just give it a shot. And yes, it'll be scary. I know it's scary. And that is the point. You want to get just past your comfort zone and try something new. And it will make you a better person, I promise. A more loving person, a more patient person, and a more compassionate human towards your fellow neighbors and community. Whew, that was quite the speech. There you go.
That was so good. I was so, like, ready to applaud.
It was such a loaded question for you. I'm like, it's like, what's the meaning of life? And you handled that so well. It was so good. Yeah.
That was so good. I feel so empowered to go do something new right now.
Yeah. And, you know, we just recently watched your Burning Man video. And it was interesting to hear, like, your view on things and then what the news was saying on the other side of that. And so it's just a really good reminder to like go experience something for yourself. And we love that. So
I would ask one more question. Do you find that the more new experiences you put yourself in, do you find that that initial challenge of it gets easier with each one? Like, you know that at the end of the day, it's going to be okay. Like, you're going to fail or you'll succeed, but it's a new experience. Do you find that each one gets a little bit easier?
You know, I don't know, because it can still be intimidating. Even when I go out on a new adventure, if I'm going far away to Rwanda or even to Mexico, a place where I'm really comfortable, like, there's always so many unknowns. You're like, here I go, I'm packing up all my gear and I'm flying on an airplane and I'm getting off the airplane and I'm going to go out into the middle of nowhere and I hope everything, you know, goes smoothly. But I do know that it always does work out. People ask me questions all the time about what if it doesn't work out? What if this happens? What if that happens? And it's like, things happen. That's all part of going on an adventure. Things rarely turn out the way that I have them planned in my mind, or that goes for anybody as well. So, I mean, yes, things can go south from time to time, but that's when the good stuff happens. That's really when the magic happens. That's when you either dip, you know, deep into your soul and you do something you didn't think you were capable of, and that feels really good, and you get past a challenge, or you rely on community members and people or strangers, and you ask them for help. You know, I talk a lot about trail magic on my channel, and trail magic is when people essentially come out of nowhere to save the day and help you, and through hikers know a lot about this. You know, people will set up essentially aid stations on different trails just to help hikers out. And there's also lots of unplanned trail magic where maybe you're caught in a rainstorm and you're huddling under a tree somewhere and somebody sees you and they invite you into their car to warm up, and then they take you home and you have dinner with them, and it turns into this whole relationship and you're in touch with them for 20 years. I mean, I've had that happen so many times to me, and that's really the magic. And I've met all these wonderful people throughout the years that I'm still in touch with. And that to me is the best part of all this.
I love that. Yeah, people are the best part of experiencing anything or travel. Travel is about the people to us.
Yeah.
And we love the good food too, but like we really like the people.
Yeah.
For sure.
So Ryan, if people wanted to follow along your adventures, because I feel like a lot of people will want to follow along after this, where can we do that? What can we do?
You know, YouTube is the best place. That's where I put most of my content that I really truly care about. So YouTube, I think my channel is Doozer TV. I don't even know what my handle is anymore.
We'll link it down below. Yeah.
You can just Google my name and things will pop up. Yeah. Second best place is probably Instagram. That's where I post most like up to date in the moment, you know, stuff about my adventures. But YouTube's really where I put all of my heart and my soul.
Perfect.
Perfect. Yeah, we'll link everything down below.
So, yeah. Ryan, thank you so much. It's been so fun talking to you, and we can't wait to follow more of your adventures.
Yeah, and thank you so much for this opportunity. You two are awesome, and I wish you all the best on your adventures.
Thank you.
And maybe we'll meet someday.
I know. Maybe Ragbri. You have us. We've been wanting to do Ragbri for over a decade now, so maybe Ragbri will be where we finally meet up one
Come
day.
Come do Ragbri. It's so fun. Yeah.
That's the dream. Yes.
Yeah. And for the listeners out there who don't know what Ragbri is, it's a gigantic bike party all the way across the state of Iowa. There's about 25,000 people that ride from the west side of Iowa to the east side of Iowa, about 450 miles over a span of 7 days. I always call it a rolling county fair. There's bake sales and there's slip and slides and there's country bands. And it really brings out the best of small town America.
I love that. The Midwest in general is just a special place to cycle. Yeah, it really is.
Ryan,
thank you so much. This is great.
Thank you.
We'll talk soon. Bye-bye.
Thanks for listening to What No One Tells You with Chris and Sarah. If you have a comment or question that you want answered on the air, be sure to send us a message to hello@chrisandsarah.com, or you can call or text our phone number at 423-825-9572. Thanks for listening.